And now for something completely different.
It's a Rick Bass World. Forget everything you've been told by others before. Get ready for the real deal. The full story. Real talk about money, markets, life. Now, it's The Real Investment Show with Lance Roberts. Presented by RIA Advisors.
And good morning and welcome to the middle of October. Yep, 2 weeks left for the election, coming right up around the corner to a voting booth near you. be sure to get ready to go vote. Trust me, every vote's going to count this year. You know what's amazing to me, and actually if you go back just a few years to the last election we had when President Obama was running against Donald Trump, and then really go all the way back to 2008 when Barack Obama was running against the Crypt Keeper, John McCain. It's interesting how the story has turned here a bit. Back then, we were talking about, you know, there's a lot of talk about Texas seceding from the Union, mm-hmm. and, you know, all these states were going to secede if Obama got elected, yeah. and, you know, so forth and so on. And you're hearing the exact same thing this election, that if Trump wins again, states want to secede. You can't secede. That was solved in the Constitution. Okay. You can't do it. But it's always interesting now, you know, the narrative has completely flipped. And, you know, back in the previous elections, it was the Democrats saying that they wanted to secede from the Union. Now it's conservatives saying they want to secede. It's just an interesting thing.
But it's the same string of celebrities that say they'll leave.
Right, but they never do. They're still here. Yeah. Barbara Streisand, still here. So,
Roseanne.
You know, so over the weekend, of course, more talk about more stimulus. Right now, President Trump is talking about he'll back a big deal. Right? You want $2 trillion? You want $3 trillion? I don't care. Go big or go home. This is President Trump's new tack on getting stimulus. Why? Well, because stimulus is going to drive the stock market higher, and that helps improve his election odds. And of course, everything kind of focused on that right now. But it's interesting. We're now pushing a $3.1 trillion deficit as of the month of October. $3.1 trillion. Now, that'll be closer to $4 trillion by the time we get to the end of the year. That's even without more stimulus. So if we get more stimulus, it's going to be a lot bigger than that. $3.1 trillion deficit. We're now approaching, you know, levels that we've never seen historically in terms of debts and deficits. And we've talked about this before, that fiscal conservatism is dead. And that has long-term implications for both the stock market and the economy. Hey, you know, I agree with you, right? More stimulus. The Fed can then monetize that stimulus, throw the money into the stock market, makes everybody richer. Well, it makes the top 10% of the economy richer, not so much for everybody else. But stock market's new highs, that certainly sounds like a good thing. The problem with $3.1 trillion in deficit, and we talked about this last week as well, and we've talked about it in our recent articles, talking about the CBO and our one-way trip of American debt, is that it leads to slower and weaker economic prosperity. Debt is not conducive to economic growth. It's actually quite the opposite. But it's also the misuse of all these stimulus packages that we put out there. I mean, you know, 44 people were arrested in Beverly Hills. Now, Beverly Hills, all right? 44 people arrested in Beverly Hills for unemployment benefit fraud, right? These are rich people. You know, Nuke Bizzle. Did you hear about this story, Brent? Nuke Bizzle. He is a rapper in California. Ah. Now, look, if you're going to do the crime, don't publicize it, okay? Yeah. Nuke Bizzle is a rapper that used 92 different debit cards in other people's names to extract $1.2 million in unemployment benefits, right? We did these extended unemployment benefits, and we just did it kind of off the cuff. Hey, if you want to claim unemployment, go claim unemployment. You'll get $600 a week. How many people do you think went out there and claimed unemployment that weren't really unemployed? A lot, right? Especially if you were self-employed, that's easy to do. Oh, I lost my job. I fired myself, right? So I need unemployment benefit. You know, the problem with all these stimulus programs is there's no real process that's, we just do this kind of haphazardly. We just start sending checks out to people. We sent over $1 billion of checks to people that are dead. In terms of these household checks. So, I mean, we've done all these things. And look, I know the best of intentions here, but we wind up wasting a lot of money. But Nuke Bizzle goes out, gets $1.2 million unemployment benefits, then makes a rap video about it, telling everybody how he did it. And of course, he's now been arrested and faces 22 years in prison. as Snoop Dogg would say, don't fizzle my bizzle. So
you can't make this stuff up.
You can't make this stuff up. It's all good. Okay, real quick here. Let's get to the markets before we get into. We got a lot of stuff to get into today. We're going to talk a little bit about Neil Cash Carey. I call him Cash and Carey because that's all he does pretty much good for.
He sounds like a rapper.
He does sound like a rapper. He should go into that. He's more like Dr. Evil. I was actually going to do a graphic of him. You ever see him? He's got completely bald, right? And he's like, more money.
So, more stimulus.
More stimulus, please. Markets are going to be up today as we get ready to kind of go into the last couple of weeks of October. Look, we're moving into the seasonally strong period of the year, November, December. Markets have been rallying here. Look, and this is a weekly chart, so this has slowed down here a little bit. Money flow indicators are starting to get a little bit stretched to the downside. If we start to get some more buying power in here, another stimulus package, this will turn up here. This is going to potentially provide some catalyst for the end of the year, what you'd expect to get from stimulus. On a short-term basis, the markets kind of really look the same way. We're not exceedingly overbought yet, so there's still room for this market to run here over the course of the next week or so. And again, that would also not really kind of be all that surprising. And, you know, when you take a look at the S&P as well, we've really kind of just been consolidating this recent gain. We're sitting here just above the 50 and the 20-day moving average. We are on a very short-term money flow sell signal, so that suggests that we could have a little bit of sloppiness here, may get a little uptick today, could be a little bit sloppy this week, kind of back and forth, really, as we kind of hash through whether or not there's going to be more stimulus or not. Nancy Pelosi has said that the Senate has 48 hours to pass stimulus, or there won't be another stimulus deal till after the election. Senate is going to take up two standalone bills this week, particularly just to fund PPP and maybe just a small $500 billion kind of skinny package for stimulus. What's going to wind up here probably is nothing's going to happen here as well as stimulus goes, and that could put a little bit of pressure on markets. So again, a little bit of sloppiness this week certainly won't be surprising. So again, just kind of pay attention to that. Our newsletter is out. We did talk a little bit about this and about kind of where markets are and kind of what we're doing in our portfolios right now. That's on the website now, at the website realinvestmentadvice.com. When we come back, we'll talk about moral hazard. What is moral hazard? Talk about that when we come back on The Real Investment Show. I'm your host, Lance Roberts. Be right back. Are you hanging on the edge of your seat? I don't go away to bullets. Red leads when it's time to beat.
Real Investment Show podcasts are now available on iTunes. Listen anyplace, anytime at iTunes.com.
Who will win the election in November? How will that decision affect your decisions for your retirement? Richard Rosso and Danny Ratliff's next Candid Coffee can answer your questions about money, retirement, risk management, and how to identify and protect your household against financial vulnerability, regardless of who's elected. Send your questions and join this live GoToWebinar event at realinvestmentadvice.com. Candid Coffee with Ratliff and Rosso at realinvestmentadvice.com.
So this morning it's 6:17 as we kind of get this Monday underway. Again, as we kind of get ready to move into the last 2 weeks before the election, this is where all the craziness is about to begin. So just hang on to your hats. It's going to be nonstop television commercials for the next 2 weeks. So lots of stuff going on. This weekend on Saturday, we're going to have a Candid Coffee. I'm going to join Richard Rosso and Danny Ratliff to talk about policies over politics and what that generally means for the markets, kind of how to invest for it, what to be looking for, those type of things. This year could certainly bring a lot of surprises, particularly, you know, right now, Biden leads Trump in the polls by about 10 points. And again, you know, this goes back to the kind of a replay of the 2016 election where Hillary was leading in the election, and
There was an upset in the polls the night of the election. So, you know, is this going to be a repeat? That's depends on which side of the which side you're standing on as to what you're rooting for here. But I tell you, there's a lot of angst right now, and so markets are likely going to be a little bit sloppy here heading into the election. That would be, you know, historically very normal as Wall Street kind of tries to kind of prepare itself for a potential outcome of the election. Post-election, markets tend to do better once you kind of know what the event is. Of course, the big risk and something that we'll talk about this weekend is the 2000 election when Al Gore was running against George Bush at the time, and there was a contested election, and we had the hanging chad in Florida. And of course, that election went all the way to the Supreme Court to be decided on December the 12th. So between November the 2nd, December the 12th, we didn't know who the president was, actually. And that led to a bit of market turbulence. So we wrote about that this past weekend's newsletter. It's on the website now. And we'll be discussing that in person and on Saturday. So if you want to join our Candid Coffee this Saturday, simply go by the website, click on the banner for Candid Coffee, register there, and we'll send you a link for this weekend's video. So, all right. Neil Kashkari, he is the president of the Minneapolis Fed. He's also affectionately known as Dr. Evil. There's a definition in the dictionary for moral hazard. Moral hazard, the definition, the lack of incentive to guard against risk where one is protected from its consequences, IG insurance. And this is interesting because Neil Kashkari was on a CNBC interview just last week talking. He says, I don't see any moral hazard here from what the Federal Reserve is doing in terms of all these, you know, stimulus programs. We have valuations at the second highest level on record. We have an all-time record in terms of market cap to GDP, which is one of Warren Buffett's favorite valuation measures. And what that means is basically you've got a distortion of financial assets relative to what's going on in the overall economy. The overall economy is growing at about 2%. The stock market is detached from what's actually happening within the economy. And those that shouldn't occur. Historically speaking, going back 130 years, the economy's grown at about the same rate as the appreciation of the stock market. And that's what you would expect because, again, the stock market is not the economy, but the stock market is a reflection of what's happening in the economy because their revenue comes from what people are consuming and doing within the economy, right? So if the economy's weak, then the stock market should be reflective of what's happening in the economy. But because of what we do now in terms of, you know, manipulating earnings through stock buybacks, accounting gimmicks, you know, all kinds of different metrics, you know, we use operating earnings, which are earnings the way I wish they would be before I actually had to operate a business. And since we don't actually use, you know, real reported earnings to measure stocks, we have these distortion in earnings. And I told you before we got into earnings season, I said, you know, that earnings estimates have been lowered dramatically so that all these companies can get over their bar. And I said, and you're going to start hearing stories about the huge beat rate of companies beating earnings. Here you go. Morning brief. The bar's already set high for companies to deliver impressive results. It's still pretty early in the season. Only about 10% of S&P 500 market cap have announced their results. But on average, companies are blowing out their numbers. Earnings have surpassed estimates by 23% in aggregate. 86% of companies beating their projections, according to Jonathan Golub over at Credit Suisse. See, I told you. Wouldn't be long. It's called millennial soccer, right? We continue to lower the bar until everybody gets a trophy, right? So that's where we are. But that's part of the problem here that we've created by doing all of these stimulus programs, et cetera, that flows directly into the stock market. So we've detached markets from their underlying value. We've created these distortions of capital. And, you know, we've talked about the fact that the top 10% of income earners own 80% of the stock market, actually almost 90% of the stock market now. You know, the top 10% of income earners have had all the wage growth. I mean, you name it, right? It's all bifurcated to the top 10%. But Neil Kashkari sees absolutely no moral hazard here. We also right now have more what we call zombie companies in the S&P than ever before on record. What's a zombie company? This is a definition from Axios. Or I shouldn't say a definition. This is a comment from Axios last week. Zombies are firms whose debt servicing cost, right, the amount of money they require to just to service their debt, are higher than their profits, but they are kept alive by relentless borrowing because of low interest rates, right? The Federal Reserve has lowered interest rates to zero, have provided just an inordinate amount of money to the markets. And the goal of this was to make sure that the bond market's working okay, but yet we have record high-yield junk bond issuance and record investment-grade bond issuance right now. Bond markets are working fine. Nothing wrong there. People are willing to step out there in the limb and take all the risks that they can take for hoping to get a better return, right? Now, think about that for a second. Let's go back to the definition of moral hazard for a moment. Neil Kashkari says he doesn't see any moral hazard here. What's moral hazard? Moral hazard is where people are willing to take on excess risk because they feel that they are protected from it. In other words, they have insurance against loss. And so what do we have now? We have Robinhood people. They are the largest holders of sub-$5 stocks. That is pure speculation, right? I'm betting on a dollar stock going to $2 stock. I'm going to get rich overnight. If this stock goes from $1 to $50, I'm going to be a billionaire, right? Millennials are holding more sub-$5 stocks than anybody else right now. Lots of speculation. People are buying high-yield credit, junk bonds, just to get some form of yield, right? And not worried about the fact that these companies, that this debt is being issued by companies that can't even really service their costs. A lot of these zombie companies are having to issue bonds just to service their debt. But investors don't feel like there's any risk here. Why? Because the Federal Reserve has insured them. This is the belief. The Federal Reserve has provided the Federal Reserve put, right? So that's the insurance that the Federal Reserve will not let the markets go down. The Federal Reserve will not let corporations default on their debt. They'll make sure that debt is paid. And even the Fed went as far as buying junk bonds, junk bond ETFs, to ensure that the high yield market would function properly and people wouldn't take losses. So see, that's the definition of moral hazard. Investors are willing to take on excess risk because they have been promised, or at least they feel like they've been promised by the Federal Reserve, that there is no risk of loss. That is moral hazard. But see, Neil Kashkari doesn't see that because he's the Fed mouthpiece. And so he's come out saying, so what? We're blowing another bubble. Who cares? There's no risk here in blowing another bubble. But the problem is that we're creating bubble after bubble, and I even wrote an article about a year ago now. I said the Fed will have to blow another bubble to offset the deflation of the previous bubble. And that's what we did. When the market cracked in March, the Fed immediately leapt into action, trillions of dollars worth of stimulus to create another asset bubble, which they did successfully, right? And so now everything's back to normal, or at least seems that way. But ironically, despite the fact that the markets are near record highs, the economy's kind of zooming along here, just had retail sales last week at a record, everything seems to be right back to normal, we still have this major bifurcation in the markets. We have 10% of the economy is doing very well, 80 to 90% of the economy that's not. So while Neil Kashkari doesn't see any moral hazard here, the entire market is a definition of moral hazard. Be right back after the break.
Get daily investment news you can use, delivered at the speed of the internet. Sign up for the Real Investment Report now at realinvestmentadvice.com.
Who will win the election in November? How will that decision affect your decisions for your retirement? Richard Rosso and Danny Ratliff's next Candid Coffee can answer your questions about money, retirement, risk management, and how to identify and protect your household against financial vulnerability, regardless of who's elected. Send your questions and join this live GoToWebinar event at realinvestmentadvice.com. Candid Coffee with Ratliff and Rosso at realinvestmentadvice.com.
the show this morning. It's 6:33 as we get the show underway. And a little bit about moral hazard here in the last segment. Neil Kashkari, the president of the Fed, Minneapolis. He's the president of the Minneapolis Fed. I'll spit that out. Talking about he doesn't see any moral hazard by, you know, the Federal Reserve doing all of these bailout programs, et cetera, for banks and everything else. And of course, you know, we now have, after two rounds of bailouts, 2008 as well as now, you know, the banking industry used to be pretty well diversified. The top five banks made up about 20% of the banking industry prior to 2008. After 2008, they made up about 40%, and now they're about 60% of the entire banking sector. So you have these, you know, these major banks that pretty much dominate the entire financial markets and also dominate the kind of control of the markets in a lot of ways. And it's interesting because the Federal Reserve keeps giving them more and more money, but yet they're making less and less in loans. And this was the whole idea behind, you know, these whole bailouts to begin with. It was that the Federal Reserve provides all this excess liquidity to the banks, and the banks will turn around and loan that out to the economy. And then the economy will, you know, take that money and they'll invest it, and then you'll get better economic growth and you'll get economic blah, blah, blah. It works all great. Problem is, banks said, you're going to give me free money? Let's see, I can take free money. I can buy treasuries. I can then leverage that 10-to-1 against the Japanese yen, and I can invest that back into equities, and I can drive equity prices up. Yeah, why would I loan that to Joe on a 30-year mortgage who probably won't pay me back? Right. So the loans that banks are making are less and less, and more the excess reserves are simply just flowing back into the financial markets. And of course, that's what you get. See, that's moral hazard, right? The banks are going, I'll take risk because I've got no risk of loss. You know, and this is what we've seen repeatedly since the Federal Reserve has decided to bail out the major banks, and we won't allow a major bank now to go bankrupt because they are too big to fail, right? Corporations as well. This is what happened during the financial crisis. We decided that we can't allow capitalism to work. See, capitalism has a Darwinian function of weeding out the weak. We have record level of zombie companies. Why? They should go out of business because they're not fundamentally sound companies. But see, we continue to provide more and more liquidity to these companies because the banks don't want to take the losses. And you know, there's an old joke about if you owe the bank $1,000, it's your problem. If you owe the bank $1,000,000, it's the bank's problem. And that's what we've gotten to. See, these companies have borrowed so much money, the banks keep lending them more money because they can't afford them to go bankrupt, right? It impacts the banks. So this is the moral hazard, right? We keep supporting and propping up all these things because nobody wants to take the penalty. And there's a consequence for that. The consequence is, of course, slower growth. You know, as we were talking about a moment ago with moral hazard, you know, one of the side effects of moral hazard is that you just get slower and slower economic growth. And, you know, this is the problem with zombie companies in particular because, you know, the problem with zombie companies is that they deter capital from productive use. They're basically bringing in capital just to pay debt, right? They're not investing it. They're not growing it. So, you know, the problem is that that continues to create less and less economic prosperity. This was a statement by Axios in that same regard. Such is a macroeconomic problem. Zombie firms are less productive because they're zombies. And their existence lowers investment in and employment at more productive firms. See, if these companies would go bankrupt, right? So I have this, you know, this zombie company, it exists and it's got employees. And if the company would go out of business, then those employees, that talent would go to other firms. And if that company was going out of business, another firm may say, you know what, you know, XYZ company, they've got, you know, say it's an oil and gas drilling company, right? They've got good properties. They've got whatever it is. They go buy the assets from that. The company goes out of business. The good employees get transferred to a new company, so forth and so on, right? Such as macroeconomic problems, zombie firms are less productive and their existence lowers investment in and employment at more productive firms. In short, a side effect of central banks keeping rates low for a long time is it keeps unproductive firms alive. Ultimately, that lowers the long-run growth rate of the economy. And that's why since 2008, the economy has barely grown at 2%, and coming out of this financial crisis, the economy is going to grow at less than 1.75% long term. Now, you're going to get some intermittent pops, right? We're going to see, you know, a 30% jump in GDP for the third quarter. That'll slow down next quarter. By the end of next year, we'll be back to a 2% or less growth rate in the overall economy. So, but you know, these things, your numbers are going to bump around from quarter to quarter, but it's going to be the average run rate that's going to be 2% or less. And that's because of what we're doing with all of these bailouts. Now, what's interesting is that Neel Kashkari is a bit of a hypocrite. I have a quote from him previously about the bailouts in 2008. He said, the shareholders got bailed out. The board of directors got bailed out. Management got bailed out. So from their perspective, there was no crisis. Bingo. We forget the lessons of the 2008 crisis. The bailouts worked too well. Financial crises keep happening because we forget how bad they were. Neel Kashkari said that. But here's a guy that says, look, I see the moral hazard that we did back in 2008. We bailed out all the companies. We shafted the American public. We shafted the economy. We created a class warfare now between the top 10% and the bottom 90%. And there's no moral hazard. But yet we forget about how bad financial crises were because we keep bailing them out. So, you know, he's like Tonto. Men speak with forked tongue. If you never watched The Lone Ranger, you're probably too young for the show.
They could never get away with that now.
No, not at all. Not anymore. Lone Ranger would be ink. But that's the problem. I mean, you know, all these guys, they speak out of, you know, both sides of their mouth. They tell you what they want to hear at the moment. But again, you know, they're all supportive right now of more bailouts and more stimulus. Now, here's the thing that they did make a mistake on. In 2008, we talked about this. In 2008, you're flooding the system with liquidity to help bail out the credit markets, bail out the bond market, bail out the stock market. Great, right? You bailed out all these things. You've got zero interest rates, lots of liquidity sloshing around. And the problem was is they held rates low for too long, right? And we just created a bigger and bigger asset bubble. And what they should have done is they should have started hiking rates and normalizing rates much sooner. Like in 2012. And had they done that, as the economy got back to running kind of, you know, at normal levels, and you had all this liquidity in the markets, yeah, you're going to suppress the stock market a little bit. Market's not going to go up as much. Got it. But you hike rates, and you start normalizing the balance sheet, and you get ready for, guess what? The next recession. So you have those tools ready. Well, here we are again. Back at zero, excess liquidity sloshing around the market, record retail sales last week. Economy's humming along. We have a 30% pop in GDP coming up this quarter, 30-35%. Now's the time to go ahead and start raising interest rates. I know, don't want to hear it. Be bad for the stock market, but you got the stock market near a record high. Start hiking rates here. Reduce liquidity. Get ready for the next downturn, right? Don't make the same mistake you made last time by keeping rates too low for too long. But see, this is the problem that we keep getting into. We just keep creating one asset bubble after the next. So we create one financial crisis after the next. I'm doing an article coming up here pretty soon that shows this explicitly. And there's a lot of people that keep talking about how rates are about to rise. Rates, interest rates are not going up ever. Can't. $75 trillion in debt, about to be $78 trillion in debt. You know, this is the one thing we keep forgetting. Is the amount of debt that we keep racking up here. Randy Quarles over at the Fed said the Fed may have engaged in asset buying for some time as financial markets are dealing with too many treasuries to handle on their own. Total public debt now stands at just under $28 trillion. That's up from $23 trillion in the beginning of this year. Debt is also $9.4 trillion higher than it was in the first quarter of 2008. This is a problem. That's a problem. That's a problem for long-term economic growth. It's also a problem for our future economic prosperity. Be right back after the break. If you want me off your back, well, come on and let me know. Should I stay or should I go?
Got questions for Lance later? Ask now at realinvestmentadvice.com.
Who will win the election in November? How will that decision affect your decisions for your retirement? Richard Rosso and Danny Ratliff's next Candid Coffee can answer your questions about money, retirement, risk management, and how to identify and protect your household against financial vulnerability, regardless of who's elected. Send your questions and join this live GoToWebinar event at realinvestmentadvice.com. Candid Coffee with Ratliff and Rosso at realinvestmentadvice.com.
Morning, 6:47. So let's talk a little bit about stimulus, because Nancy Pelosi has now given the Senate 48 hours to do something, or there'll be no stimulus till after the election. President Trump has tweeted out, hey, you know, he's now down to the point that, you know, he... You know, for a moment there, there was about 37 seconds there. I was really proud of Donald Trump, because he said like a week ago, he goes, forget it. We're not doing any stimulus. These people are being unreasonable. Good. Good job. That was awesome. And then the next morning after the stock market tanked, he's like, okay, I'm open to a big deal. Let's do a really big deal on stimulus to go home. Dude, we're wrapping up debt like nobody's business, right? You got to pay off the debt at some point. You got to deal with it. But it's interesting now, because we're now back and forth, and you know, as we head into the election, believe it or not, there's a lot of fiscally conservative individuals still left in the world that are going to be voting for their senators and their congressmen. And the debt is an issue. People are concerned about the debt and this kind of runaway, unbridled spending without any concern is a concern, right? So this has become a challenge for a lot of senators, in particular, that are up for re-election. And Lindsey Graham, in particular, is saying, Mitch McConnell is saying that, you know, he's not open to doing another $2 trillion deal. And again, you know, part of the issue is that this, you know, these really big packages, they want to send a bunch of money to states to help bail out the states. Don't need to do that. We have record muni bond issuance right now. States and municipalities have access to bond markets. They can issue debt to raise capital. They don't need a bailout. They may not want to take on more debt, right? But since they weren't running their, you know, their cities and states and municipalities, you know, on a balanced budget anyway, and we're already deeply in debt, they don't want to go into more debt, right? So everybody is, why would I want to take on more debt if the government's willing to give me free money, right? I mean, this is really what we're down to. Why work if mom and dad will give me money? But you got to quit bailing out the kids, right? Sooner or later, you got to let the kids stand on their own, for the good of the country long term. Look, and this is about to get into one of those real sticky points. And I get it. Right? We need to do more stimulus, right? Because we've got to get more unemployment benefits to people that are unemployed, and we've got to get more direct checks to households for people that need money to live. I understand that. There's a great headline out this morning. Desperate for stimulus checks, millions of jobless Americans have nearly exhausted their savings. They didn't have savings to start with. The only savings they had was what they got from the government when the government sent them checks and an extra $600 a week, right? This is why you have record retail sales right now. Because they didn't save the money. They just went out and spent it on crap. See, this is the problem. Most Americans financially are very poor at finances, right? You give them money, they're going to go out and spend it. Yeah, great. That's good, right? That gets people back in the economy, but it's not long lasting, because you've got to keep doing the stimulus, right? As soon as that shot of stimulus runs through the market, you're right back to where you were, back to square zero. So you've got to keep doing the stimulus to keep it going, right? But again, then at some point you got to deal with the debt. But this is part and parcel of what we're talking about a few minutes ago, is that this is the moral hazard. And I know this is going to sound really cruel, right? But at some point, you just got to let the cycle occur. Yeah, people are going to get hurt. I know. It's a bad thing. People are going to lose their houses. They're going to get kicked out of their apartments. They're going to whatever. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a bad thing. They're going to file for bankruptcy. Yeah, it's a bad thing. But guess what? Short-term pain now leaves a lot of Americans with a much cleaner balance sheet, the ability to move somewhere else where they can get a job and start their life over in a much better, healthier position. And maybe that process of going through that cycle teaches them some financial responsibility, and they come out and say, you know, hey, I'm not going to get myself back into that trap again. I'm going to save, so I'm going to start saving some extra money. I'm going to live a little bit leaner than I did before. I really didn't need all that junk, right, that I was buying. Maybe, just maybe, going through that cycle gets people into a better position. But see, we don't want to go through the pain. And look, I'm not saying we should just, like, you know, trash the entire economy. But what I'm saying is that what we've decided to do is to try to avoid the pain at all costs, but trying to avoid the pain at all costs is actually leading to longer-term economic inequality across the entire economy. And so, you know, what we're not thinking about is that nobody wants to go through pain, right? That's a terrible thing. But sometimes if you go through that short-term pain, you actually wind up in a better position. You know, we've all had troubles in our lives, right? We've all wound up in a position at one point or another that you go, man, I'm never going back to that. I lived out of my truck for 3 years building a business. I never want to go back to that again, right? So I make sure that I have plenty of money in savings. I have, you know, plenty of security set aside because I don't want to go back to that again. I've been there. Don't want to do that again. So, you know, this is lessons that we learn, but by not allowing the cycle to occur, and this is what the Fed's trying to do. The Fed's trying to eliminate the business cycle. But yet, by trying to eliminate the business cycle, we foster bad habits. Have you ever looked at those at some kids, and they're like always in trouble? They're constantly, you know, getting arrested, or you know, and they're doing drugs, and they're the bad kids, right? But they're the bad kids of an affluent family, so they keep getting bailed out, right? They, you know, they get arrested, but they get released because the dad's got influence with, you know, a local county official or whatever. And so the kid just keeps getting, you know, we see this in movies all the time too, right? It's always that kid. But the kid never learns, right? Because he's constantly bailed out. So he just keeps doing the same behavior over and over and over again because he keeps getting bailed out. And then finally, you know, it's always one of those movies where, you know, at the end, finally the dad says, enough, I'm not bailing you out. And the kid goes to prison for like 5 years. He comes out and he gets his act together and he becomes a nice, productive citizen of society, right? Whatever. What I'm saying is that sometimes you've got to go through that pain in order to begin again, right? And we won't allow that to happen. Because we don't want to hurt anybody, right? We don't want people to have to suffer, right? We upended our entire healthcare system for 20 million people that had not wanted to get healthcare for one reason or the other. So we upended our entire healthcare system for 330 million people for 20 million. And so now we're dealing with those consequences. Higher healthcare costs, blah, blah, blah. See, we keep making these decisions for the few, rather than thinking about the decisions for the many. And in any society, no matter what society it is, there's always a bifurcation of people. There's always the extremely poor, there's always the extremely rich, and there's the big chunk in the middle. But you can't make the decisions for the few at the expense of the many. And that's what we keep doing. And the consequence of this is that right now it doesn't seem to be a consequence at the moment, right? More debts, more deficits, who cares, right? Just give me more money. Send me another check. Send me more unemployment benefits. It's just deficits. It's just debts. Doesn't matter. Doesn't seem to have a consequence, right? More debt we pile on. Market goes up. Economy seems to be doing okay. Doesn't really seem to be a consequence. Take a look at our article today. I have a couple of charts from Japan. The economic growth rate in Japan is lower than it was 40 years ago. Economic growth is weaker than it was 40 years ago. You know, Japan is not so different than us. They have a massively unfunded Social Security system. They have an aging demographic, aging population. They have a lot of similarities to where we are currently. They're just ahead of us about 20 years. And so as a good microcosm of, kind of looking at the Petri dish, so to speak, Japan's a good example of the direction we're headed. Yeah, short-term benefits are great. We can do all these things, right? We can do free college. We can do, free healthcare. We can do all these things, right? Just debt. But there's a consequence for that, ultimately. And we just don't want to admit to that because we don't want to allow people to go through the pain. But maybe, just a different way to think about things. Maybe, just maybe. Allowing the business cycle to occur, allowing the economic cycle to occur, just let it run its route. We wrote an article on this. It's on our website now called Recessions Are a Good Thing. Maybe we should just let them happen. Maybe, just maybe. Let's try something crazy, right? Let's just try something different. Let's just allow the economic cycle to occur. Yeah, it's going to have some short-term pain, but maybe, just maybe, we get some long-term benefit out of it. And ultimately, isn't that what we want for everybody? Better economic equality, better economic prosperity for everyone? Maybe if we had better economic prosperity, we wouldn't have riots in the streets. Just saying. Wrap up the show for the day. Get by the website. Our article out is this morning is talking about Neil Kashkari and the definition of moral hazard. It's on the website now, along with all the relevant charts and graphs, of course, as always. And make sure that while you're at the website, realinvestmentadvice.com, that you get registered for this weekend's Candid Coffee. I'm going to join Danny Ratliff and Richard Rosso to talk about policies over politics. What are the election outcomes and what should we be focusing on, particularly when it comes to the financial markets and your money? That's coming up this Saturday at 8 a.m. It's a virtual event. You can register now at the website, realinvestmentadvice.com. Simply click the registration link. Get the latest articles. Our newsletter is out as well, all on the website now, realinvestmentadvice.com. Have a great day, and we'll be back tomorrow for Tuesday's edition of the Real Investment Show right here at realinvestmentadvice.com. Stick around, though. Chris Salcedo is coming right up. It's a rich man's world.